Thank you for calling me human, Nick. I really appreciate that. And also, thank you for wearing those shoes, which are absolutely... Can we have it for Nick's shoes? That's right, ladies. Poetry and cool shoes, but he's taken. Anyway, I want to thank Jimmy and Joan for this incredible series and the chance to read here again. And I especially want to thank my mentor, Michael Worcester, who has been a great friend to me. In fact, my first friend when I got back to Pittsburgh. I was the first guy I asked to borrow money from that said yes, so I really want to thank him. Michael has the most encyclopedic, poetic mind of anyone I've ever met. I mean, you can sit there and have dinner with him, and he'll look at your fork and say, oh, there's this great fork poem by Derek Walcott. Which is doubly funny, because talking in tonight, he actually mentioned Derek Walcott, and I was going to say that. So he's also psychic, so that's pretty cool. I want to thank all of you for coming to hear poetry. There's a lot you could be doing right now instead of being here. You could have stayed home. You could have watched TV. I know that one of my favorite series is on the History Channel tonight, which is Know Your Barbarians. And they're profiling the Visigoths, the Saxons, and Donald Trump. So all of that in one evening. In any event, I want to read a poem here, which really, I don't like to explain poems, but I'll just say this is proof that you can go to the same place as Bob Seger and come away with a different experience. This is called Hotel Kathmandu. The old lady drops two pills into her drink, one to kill the germs and one to kill the taste of the one that kills the germs. The haze of countless wandering cows floats over the stone walls like dusk arriving early for dinner. My, what a splendid garden, she observes, inhaling as if to wash all the death out of her body. I want to tell her that it's not the flowers, but what the flowers must defeat that makes their ecstasy possible. The old lady drinks, oblivious to the perfumed gods hovering above, who the souls of this country pray to with butter lamps and incense. I want to tell her, but instead I just smile and press the collar of my jacket against my face, the lover I left half a world away, joining the gods for a fragrant moment until I can hold the breath of her no longer. Thank you, and it's okay to clap. Poetry likes clapping. It's sort of like a sorbet between poems, so that's fine. I'm a big fan of ekphrastic poetry, and in case you don't know, that's a really fancy word that means poetry based on a work of art. This is not an ekphrastic poem, but I like using that word. It's actually, this poem is based on a title of a novel by Bruce Chatwin. And the poem has nothing to do with this book, but somehow there's an ekphrastic connection in there. I just wanted to get that in. This is called The Songlines. When the angels dream, it is always as children. They are jealous of the psychologist, since no one can talk to them. I'm sorry. They are jealous of the psychologists, since no one talks to them anymore. So they spend their days sitting on telephone wires, listening for voices, like children pressing dolls to their ears, imagining a heartbeat. I'm also a big fan of Japanese cinema, but I have absolutely no idea how to pronounce Japanese words. So there's four Japanese words. They're all names in this poem. I'll just, since you don't have the benefit of reading it, I'll just sort of say them up front so you know what they are. The title of the poem is called Kagemusha, K-A-G-E-M-U-S-H-A. That is a film by Kurosawa. That's, if you're counting, Japanese word number two, who's arguably the greatest director in Japanese cinematic history. And thank you. And we'll, if you don't agree, we'll fight afterwards outside in the bar if you want to take that. The third word, Mifune, that's an actor that he used a lot. Mifune is very much a Marlon Brando. Thank you, and I'm done. Literally, just sit up here and say Japanese words and you can be a successful poet. And the fourth is Hokusai. He is a painter, H-O-K-U-S-A-I. I would have done more Japanese poems if I had known this would have been the reaction tonight. So thank you so much. Kagamusha. In his dreams, Kurosawa directed the action on Golgotha. He would have had a lot more crosses on the hill. He would have had Roman soldiers kicking up dust as they marched in snaking lines from miles away. The sky would have been blue and red. Christ's face would have been painted white, and Mifune would have played him. He dreamt all of this as a little boy, and many times later. On the day he committed suicide and failed, he saw Buddha step from a small boat onto the shore by a lake at the base of Mount Fuji. He cried, became a painter, heard the ghost of Hokusai beckon to him, then ran away in fear. Decades later, smoking on the dusty slopes of the same mountain, directing his final masterpiece, he looked up towards the peak and for a moment wasn't sure if it was snowing or if heaven was once again flicking ashes on the horizon of his dreams. Thank you. I really love abstract poems because I really don't have the slightest idea what they're saying, and it's really fun to read them in workshops because no one else does either, except they pretend to, which is even more fun. So, in any event, this is dedicated to all my friends and all the workshops I've ever been in. This is called White Tigers. You can't see a white tiger even when it's sleeping in the bush before you. But in the morning you can hear it on top of the mountain. Its roar stuck in the trees, the way bird flight shatters the sky. The white tiger is always too fast for us. It leaves its tracks for us to find like a song, dead upon the ground. We are always in its wake, chasing it across some cliff, over some shore, behind some moon. It nurses its young like we nurse our pain. It sees in the dark like we see the past. When we say to each other, I will always be there for you, are we not really saying something else? When we say, I will wait for you forever, are we not really describing a white tiger, patient as the most gracious cancer, growling softly inside us? They call that a way homer. It'll make much more sense on the way home. I'm going to end with this poem because it's a beginning of spring poem, and coincidentally, it's supposedly the beginning of spring right now. And I also want to read this because my good friend, who many of you know, David Adais, always used to kid the heck out of me for not using the word love in any of my poems. So in memory and in dedication to my good friend David Adais, who's somewhere hopefully sitting in traffic outside the city of Sydney, I'd like to read, Love is like riding horses in the dark. Early that summer, the girls from the ranch asked us to go riding at night. The horses came out hesitant at first, but warmed to their saddles in the rich scent of dusk dying in the trees. We trotted along the open trail until the girls turned into the woods and hurtled ahead. As the horses ran faster, we yelled out. The turns came too quickly for us, and horses won't allow for space they don't need. Our knees were bruised and bloody by the time we got back. Nobody minded as we soothed the pain with cheap wine. The next day, the girls got in trouble for taking the horses out at night. The camp director shouted and cursed, but the girl I kissed in the barn snuck me a smile as she walked back to her cabin. And for the rest of the summer, the wind carried the danger of ecstasy, like fresh hay warming in the sunshine. Thank you. Next up, just back from her world reading tour, her command performance at Buckingham Palace, and her private audience with the Pope, who we all know loves poetry, especially those limericks. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jenny Smith.